Welcome to New Shooter Canada. Please remember that the show's content and word pronunciation is simply the opinion of the hosts and their guests.
We're all like guns, and I love being free. Because I'm armed, you can't take that from me, and you should know it.
Hello, and welcome to New Shooter Canada, episode 130. We're back. I'm one of your hosts, Mike, and tonight with me, I have Thomas.
Hello.
And Benny.
Hello.
So, Thomas, it's been a while. What have you been up to?
It's been 3 weeks, so it's quite a bit, actually. I finally got that strike one going. I did 250 rounds, and I had one light primer strike. And then a week later, I went shooting with Mike, and he put 50 rounds through it. And you got, what, two or three light primer strikes?
Two or three. I can't remember exactly.
But it did impress me. The accuracy was really nice in the gun. I was amazed that, you know, if I really worked on that trigger, they were clover leafing. So it is a super, super accurate gun. What else did I do? Oh, I got a new gun.
Oh, yeah? What'd you get?
I got a Grand Power Q100 Striker Fire 9mm pistol, and it is a nice gun. I got a message from David Coping, who's the owner of Grand Power Distribution. He's also the international North American business rep for Grand Power. And he messaged me a couple of months ago, and he said that he may have a gun for me. So I made him clarify what it was, and he said apparently that there was a couple of Q100s left over that he could not retrofit with a new trigger system. And he wanted to pay forward or thank couple people for helping him out the last couple of years, and he gave one to me, and he gave one to my Facebook friend Winston Mew, who is a big IPSC Grand Power shooter out in the West Coast. So thank you very much, David Coping. It's a beautiful gun. I actually took it to the range today. I didn't have a lot of ammo left. That aim point stuff that the Strike One hated, that choked on, this thing ate it all. It didn't really like a group rise. I was getting at 10 yards. I was getting maybe 2 inches. And then I had some old 125 grain lead round nose. This thing cloverleaf. It kept, as long as I did my part, the gun put the bolt in the same holes over and over again. So it's a really nice gun. I just got to get used to this inner trigger shoot because I'm not used to having that pressure on it. Actually, I didn't even get my scales because I actually just got in from the range now too. I put probably 300 rounds through it. I did have two light primer strikes, and those rounds would not go off a second time after being run through the gun either, so I'm not sure if it's the primers or not. I did not clean this gun.
What primers are you running?
They were Federal primers.
Federal? Oh, ooh.
Yeah. I've had a lot of people having problems with Federal primers, actually, lately. I got derailed for a second there.
But, that's what I do.
Yeah, but I think what it is that when I got this, it was new. It was covered in the factory packing grease already. David did take it apart, and he said he did change the spring, so he did put the spring kit in it. And it also has – there was a modification to the rear takedown, the rear plate where the striker is. The original one was polymer. And so what they did is that they replaced this one with the steel, and that's one of the between the – Generation 1 and Generation 2, the two major differences is, one, the trigger system. The Generation 2 has a little bit nicer – actually, I played with the Generation 2 today. It's a little bit nicer trigger, a little bit nicer break. This is still very nice. The Q100 is a nice shooting gun. The trigger is very nice on it. But the second generation, it was really, really, really nice. The other modification they did is that the rear plate on the original one was plastic. As I said, they replaced mine with metal. But on the Generation 2, they also incorporated – a gas port within the firing pin chamber, because they actually had a ruptured firing pin that blew out the striker, and it actually, like, the guy had his shooting glasses on because the material in the firing pin got blown back at him when the primer blew. So they've put a gas port in there, and they've reinforced it basically and made it metal. So that's the major difference between the two, but it's just your standard Grand Power lower. So it comes with the four back straps. It fits just like all my other guns, which is, it's nice having the interchangeability. I can pick up my K22, my X-Cal, and this thing, and they all fit and feel the same in my hand, except for this one with the Striker Fire trigger. So it's going to take a little getting used to, but it's not bad. I looked in the case. It's drift adjustable in the rear, and it's got these really high protective wings. And so from the side, I didn't really like the rear sight set up, but when you actually take the sight picture, you don't even see the wings. It's just part of the rear sight. So I don't mind the rear sights now that I've actually used them. From the factory, it was shooting dead center 2 inches to the left. So I just have to tap it over a little. And in the case, it includes, I think there's 2 other front sights, so you can change it for whatever load you're shooting on it. So I'm looking forward to cleaning it, because I said this thing came straight from the factory and it's all full of gunk. So I'm not surprised if the firing pin chambers and the striker system is all full of packing grease, because it was full of grease when I picked it up. I just wiped it off, ran it. So I bet once I clean it off, I probably won't have any issues with that. What else did I do? Oh, also, he is giving me a brand new Red Hill Tactical outside the waistband holster to go with this. When Grandpa's first hit Canada, we couldn't find any holsters. And it was LHS. They made promises to make them, and then they went out of business. So I know Grandpa approached Red Hill Tactical, and he made the first batch of Grandpa holsters. Actually, I have his Canadian hanger holster. I know my friend Mark Price has one of his holsters. So he's been making Grandpa holsters right from the beginning, and he's got a whole new series out. So actually, I've been in contact with him. That was a deal that David said. He said if the only deal he had, he's going to give me the gun and the holster, and I got to give Red Hill Tactical a shout out for the holster. So I've actually spoken to Robert, or emailed Robert, and we're trying to get him on the show. We can talk about how Kydex holsters are made and the process is going through. And what else? I was up at Williams Arms maybe 5 or 6 years ago, and there was this
we've done a show since then, Thomas.
I know.
I was going to say, they weren't open today.
You're right. They're not open on Sundays or Mondays. But whenever you go into Williams, when you go into the front desk, if you look down, you'll see a little box. And in that box is all little knickknacks. It's all being cleared out. And I found it's probably from the 70s or 80s. It's an old leather. I think it said Hertzcraft. I think it said – I've never heard of Hertzcraft. If anybody has, let us know. Made in Canada, double mag holder. And when I got this thing, it was like $10. Of course, when I got it home, the reason it was $10 was because one of the screws was seized. So I just threw it in the box and I never used it. So recently I figured, you know, I've got the gun. I've got the holster. I just need mag holders. So I pulled this thing out and I just took some dubbing. I ripped the whole thing apart. I grabbed some screws of an old Uncle Mike's holster. I replaced the retention devices. The retention screws, like, you know how your Kydex holsters have those little rubber gaskets?
Yeah.
The screw goes through. This thing, it used air hose, like for a fish tank. That's what the retention was. So when I took this thing apart, no wonder you couldn't adjust it all, because the air hose had turned into a rock. It was rock solid, and it's all discolored and everything else. So I got rid of those, and it works beautiful now. So now I'm all set for IDPA. I no longer have any more excuses to give Michael. I have the gun, I have the holster, and I have the mag holder. Actually, I don't have the holster. I was so excited when Dave gave it to me. He handed me another gun, so I put the holster down on the ground. I picked up the other gun, and I left the holster at his house. But it's a cool-looking holster. It's all Canadian flags and everything else. So thank you very much, David, and thank you, Red Hill Tactical. What about you, Benny? What'd you do with the guns this week or last couple weeks?
So I was actually really busy. That's why I couldn't help with the show. But I tried the washing machine idea. I don't remember if I spoke about this last time. I think I did, actually. But I did 50 cases originally, a test run, and that worked pretty well. I think the case holder, my press is loose, unless it's common for everyone else to hold the case in place to make sure it doesn't, you know, crush it when you ram in the, ram it into the die. Cause I actually did that twice.
Yeah, if it's not lined up, you know, perfectly, sometimes it'll wreck the case.
Yeah, so like it's shaky in there, so I gotta hold it in and then it just runs smoothly. So I did that. I deep primed 50 cases, put them aside, got busy with life. So a couple of days ago, I washed another 200. The sock came undone in the middle. So I had like 100 cases lying around. I live in an apartment building, so I'm pulling out my laundry and someone else walks in and I just have cases falling everywhere. That was fun.
Told you so. But you do the laundry, remember? That's what you said.
Yeah, yeah.
It's okay, she won't know. I do the laundry.
Yeah. So those are sitting. They're probably all dry now. Whatever. I don't know if running them wet is going to ruin anything. So like let them dry before I try and deprime them.
I think for depriming, that's not a big deal. It's more about making sure they're 100% dry before you start putting a primer or powder in them.
Right, right. Yeah. So I think I'm really far away from that right now. So I don't have to worry about that. But yeah, in terms of like also like I probably don't have to wash them, but just to make sure I don't want to like gunk up anything. So that's why I'm washing everything before I deprime it. It's not like I have anything in there to actually clean the primer pocket, but no, that's not getting clean at all right now.
That's just the way it goes unless you deprime them first, right?
So do you guys clean with an empty primer pocket, or do you guys just leave that the way it is?
I now deprime and then clean. Before, when I was just using the media tumbler, I wouldn't bother depriming first. But now that I have the metal pins and I'm using the water method, it will actually clean in there better. So I find it's worth the effort to deprime first.
Do you have an issue of your cases getting stuck because they're dirty or whatever? Or do you have a cleaning process you run them through before depriming them?
No, what I meant by that is when I was cleaning with the media, even if I deprimed first, the media wouldn't really clean out the primer pocket very well. So it wasn't really worth it in that sense. But in the sense of it, like primers fitting in, I've never had a problem.
Okay.
So I wouldn't be too concerned with that.
So I'm not really worried about the receiving the primer. I'm more concerned of there being dirt or something on the outside of the case and that getting jammed in the dye when I'm depriming. If I deprime before I clean.
Yeah.
When you deprime, any debris that's in there usually gets knocked out with the depriming pin. Like you'll see your primer pocket will be full of the media. There'll be little pieces of corn cob in there, and it all comes out when you hit the pin down.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I understand what you're saying, Benny, and you're talking about depriming using your sizing and depriming die, correct?
Right, right.
Yeah, see, that's just it. I switched over to a depriming die. So it's the Lee Universal Depriming. So it's okay. Actually big enough so that it will, you can run any caliber through it. So it's not actually touching the walls of the case. Okay. So it wouldn't matter if there's something stuck on the side of it. It wouldn't affect the die.
Okay. So I don't think I'd be able to do that because my press isn't tight enough to maintain the pin going in the center of the case every time. So I think that's an issue for me.
It's that loose, eh?
Well, like I said, if I don't, like, keep pressure on the side of the case, I dented a couple, like, two cases like that. And I have to run them through the,
What size is the case holder that you're putting them in? Is it for a 9mm?
I think so. I think it's number, I'm guessing here, like, I have no recollection. I think it's like 16, if that makes any sense to anyone.
Is it Lee or? Are you using RCBS?
RCBS. Yeah, it's RCBS.
Yeah, I was going to say 16 sounds about right for an RCBS, but I'm not sure about, not RCBS, a Lee, but I don't know about RCBS and how theirs work.
Whatever, it's my first press. It's something to get me into reloading, so it's fine.
Like I can upgrade later, right? I find it, if I my turret press, if I progress too quickly, sometimes they won't line up perfectly, and I may nick the case. That's the only time I've actually done any damage to the case if I was going too fast. But yeah, it shouldn't be slopping around. There should be a little bit of motion, but you shouldn't have to hold it for every single one.
No. Yeah, I just looked it up and it says number 16 is the correct size, for RCBS for a 9mm. Hmm. Yeah, I don't think mine ever were that sloppy when they were in there. Like sometimes they'd kind of bounce back a little bit if you were just like chucking them in there, but. Never to the point where I'd actually have to hold on to every case as it's going in. So
I don't know. We'll
actually,
see.
With my 9mm, I actually do. When I put the case in and before when I bring the die, I actually have my thumb on the bottom of it. The 45, I don't have to do that, but with the 9, with Lee, I have to. Because if it's not lined up perfectly, you will nick it. So I go too fast and.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the first time I did it, it didn't work. So I adjusted it. And then the next time I was like getting into the getting into it, into rhythm, and I crunched it. So I quickly changed the dies, ran that case through the mouth opening one, or it's called to bell it so you can see the bullet properly.
Yeah.
And I can still see a dent there. So I'm like, oh no, what, like, is this like good? Is it not good? So I send a picture and a text and a Facebook message to Trevor from Slamfire. And I'm like, is this okay? Can I use this still? Or is it like, should I throw it away? And he's like, nah, you can use it. Don't worry about it. I've done it many times. Like, I've done worse than that. It still works. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those things. I think if you don't have a lot of 9mm and you're, depending on how bad it is, right, then I could see wanting to save it. For me, at my point where I have thousands of 9mm, if I don't like it, I'll just chuck it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not like we're dealing with fancy, rare, or expensive brass.
Right. So, like, I think for me, it's still like an adventure kind of, not adventure, but like, I'm still exploring it and finding, like, I don't want to say tolerances, but like, I know absolutely nothing. So if a case is dented a little bit, you know, like, well, can I still use that case kind of thing? It's something that I'm definitely going to be looking into and trying to learn about. So.
Usually the rule is that the case, if there's any damage on the case, just get rid of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if it's, especially a pistol, like a 9mm, they're cheap, they're dime a dozen. If there's a little ding on it, just get rid of it. There's no point in having any type of burr or anything in your chamber slowing it down.
Yeah.
So I was actually wondering about that, because my Tavor, which I shot this week, by the way, I tried to sight it in, but it didn't really, we weren't using proper targets and everything, so it was kind of frustrating, but at least my dad got to shoot it for the first time. When it ejects, it like dings the neck of the case, not the neck, the mouth of the case.
Yeah, that's on the brass deflector, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of that, and I believe with 223, that's just considered commonplace. And I think most people just consider that next time you shoot, it will reform to the chamber of the rifle. And it will re-expand that, it'll punch that spot back out, essentially.
Uh-huh. So, like, again, that's not something I should be worrying about, I guess. It won't affect the function of that bullet or whatever.
I don't think it would. Mind you, with me saying that, I haven't reloaded a rifle in a long time, and I still have not loaded rifle for a AR yet.
And I've never reloaded rifle, so. So. I'm no help to you either.
But to answer your question, Benny, we'll find someone who does know.
Yeah.
I would suggest speaking to Brian Bolivar, actually. He would tell you. or Mike from the Loading Podcast. If there's just like a little bend in the lip, when you resize it, you're just going to be putting the bend back out anyway. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm thinking like if there's major gouges beginning in the side of the case, you know, maybe that could cause ejection issues down the line, but. If it's around the case mouth, I'm sure it can be resized and reused.
Right, and it's not even like someone stepped on it and now it's like pancake. It's just like a little oblong.
Yeah, if it doesn't want to expand, it's just going to crack anyway and you'll be throwing it out, so.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll be surprised at how much that resizing die can take out or put in. Yeah. Like there's 9mm rounds that I probably should have just thrown out that are like oblonged, and I'm like, let's just run it through the press and see what happens, and comes out perfect. It's like, I guess I'll keep it.
Yeah, so that's definitely a road I'm slowly toddling along now. So we'll see that leads.
Well, that's good.
So also this week while I was out at the range, it was raining, and that's why we didn't put up proper targets to actually sight in the Tavor. So at 50 yards, I have no idea where that thing's printing. But we did use – I happened to win, receive, and test a Matador Arms flapjack target this week. And it was really good. So, yeah, definitely something to look into. So
that's a resealable spinner?
So they say self-healing, but I'm not 1,000% sure what that really means, except for that it doesn't leave a gaping hole when you shoot with a 22. So I haven't shot with anything larger because I couldn't hit it with my 223, which wouldn't be larger, but definitely faster.
Yeah, so it's a reactive target that basically seals up the holes.
It just like flaps. The way I would say it's reactive is it just flaps. It's quite literally flaps in the wind. Not the wind, but like when you shoot it, it's you can see that it's been hit.
The momentum of the bullet kind of carries it a little bit as it travels through.
Right, right.
I'll say, and, Mike. I'll say.
Yeah. Like they have good videos online and I think, well, at least Lands and, shooting store at Silverdale, they carry them. Well, they don't have any in stock right now, but they, according to their website, they do carry them and they're like $13. So it's not crazy for most people will spend that much on like 5 or 10 targets. And this is supposed to last a lot longer than 5 or 10 targets.
Yeah. So,
and it was free, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, like I said, I won it. So.
And how'd you win it?
Canadian Patriot Podcast was doing a iTunes review contest kind of thing where you had to, in your review, tell them how you'd either preserve or destroy it. So I basically wanted to set off a homemade claymore using Tannerite. Well, that's my idea. Not that I would do that. Not that I have the space to do that, but.
Or the proper licenses.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Improvised explosive. That doesn't sound like a good idea.
No, that doesn't sound like something you say to the world online.
Right. I do have some Tannerite downstairs, Benny.
Like I said, this they never said you actually had to do it. It was just ideas. So, you know.
They gave away a nice muzzle brake lately, too.
Right. So same company, Matador Arms. They also gave away I think it was just like, share, and comment on one of their posts. And then you were entered to win this muzzle brake. So,
but I did enter for the muzzle brake.
Yeah, no, I actually won because no one else entered.
Hey, winning.
No one
is
else
winning.
Took the time to go on iTunes and write a review, so I won.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
Yeah.
So is that what we have to do, Mike? If we want iTunes reviews, we have to bribe our listeners, saying we'll give you this if you do that.
Sure, you donate a prize and we'll run that.
A day at the range with Thomas.
That sounds more like a punishment.
I was gonna say ammo's not included.
Thanks, guys. I'm not giving away what I just won. That's mine. I'm keeping this.
No, that's awesome, Benny. That's those are really fun. I have one similar to that. I'm curious to see what will happen when you start shooting that with hollow points.
They say don't use hollow point to extend the life, but when it gets close to the end, I don't mind giving that a shot. Not that I have any hollow points. Yeah. But apparently the guys at CPP really, really laid into it. They used everything from 22 all the way up to buckshot, I think.
Oh, wow.
And it survived all of it. Even, they say it's not supposed to take it all, but like it survived all that, so.
Yeah.
So they shot the hell of it, then they gave it away.
So I thought that's what they were going to do, but I got a brand new one, so I'm not kidding.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
Exactly.
Well, that's always good.
Yeah. So that's
good.
And I'm off keto finally. I took 2 months and then Passover happened and it's not really firearms related, but it's fitness related, so sort of, whatever. Then, so now I'm going to try and work out more rather than stop eating carbs. See what happens.
You're gonna kind of transition from the dieting aspect over more to the fitness aspect.
Yeah.
So does your diet still include the maple donuts then?
No, I felt like that one. I was still okay on the diet with that, even though it's a tough diet to keep going on. Yeah. You get, like, even now, I'm not on it, but I had Wacky Mac today and I felt so guilty.
Well, plus doesn't help his wife throws him under the bus any chance she gets on Facebook for his diet.
Yeah.
Well, it's still good. Like you said, you felt a little guilty and you know what? It's also about building new habits, right?
Right. So I was impressed I kept it for so long that I'm hoping that if I apply the same kind of mentality or focus, whatever, to the workout, then hopefully now that I've managed to keep a diet for for 2 months. Why not try to look out for 2 months, see what happens? So
that's good.
Yeah. So that's starting tonight. So we'll see how far I go tonight.
That's starting tonight. Ah, look at the donuts.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anything else then?
No, I think that's it. What have you done, Mike?
Well, I clean brass.
Again?
No, yeah, no one's surprised? Yeah, neither am I. But I actually did finally finish, kind of.
Woohoo!
Yeah, I finally made it through. I did the math at one point. I can't remember now. Like over 70 pounds of brass. So,
wow.
Yeah. Then I started reloading some 9mm. Just got a few hundred done just to kind of get everything back up and running. And then the weekend hit. Sarah and I went to Toronto and we actually stopped in at Gagnon Sports. And Sarah picked up some new sights for her M&P. And, well, she picked up sights for her Colt. Or not her Colt, sorry. Her 1911. But, of course, they were the wrong style because I don't understand why. But 1911 has like 10 different styles of sights you can go with.
You bought these at Gagnon's?
Yeah. Yeah, they had high-vis sights there. They had a decent collection of them, too.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah. So we were quite happy about that. That same weekend, went shooting with you, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
That was good. You have a nice little club there. And the indoor range is very, very clean.
Isn't it nice?
It really is.
I really enjoy shooting there because it's so well-maintained. There's a nice heating system, and it's. I hate shooting outside, so, yeah, I appreciate it. We were going to shoot outside, but the service rifle guys were there, so we had to go inside.
Yeah. Oh, well, got a different experience. Like, I haven't really shot at too many indoor ranges, so it was really nice to see what I would call a small range have such a nice indoor range. So, no, that's good. I went to a club AGM. Nothing exciting there, just people rumbling about nothing. And then this weekend hit, and I realized that I am so far behind on my reloading, so Sarah actually helped me out. She was loading up primers and reloading the bullet or the cage feeder and things like that. So I think we reloaded about 1,500 rounds of 9mm, and then I reloaded another 100 rounds of her Cowboy 38 Special. She had a cowboy match coming up next weekend, and I just loaded up 100 just so we could go to the range today and give them a test run. Went to the gun show, local gun show, and nothing special, but I did see Etienne, so that's always good. And yeah, and then today went out shooting, and it was the first time Sarah and I have actually gotten to go out shooting since we went down to Florida, so we were real excited about that.
Well, backtrack a bit. Where was the gun show?
Perth.
Okay.
Just a little town outside of Ottawa. Just a small little thing and, you know, your standard hockey arena gun show.
Did you know that ET was going to be there or you just ran into him?
No, we knew. We saw on Facebook. He had posted all leading up to it that he was going to be there. So we made a point to find the CCFR booth and go talk to him.
Oh, good stuff.
Yeah. Yep. So yeah, so today we just, we went shooting, spent a lot of time with Sarah doing her cowboy shooting because she has a match, like I said, coming up next weekend. And it's the first time she'll have shot a cowboy match since before she got pregnant last year. So it's been quite a while. So she wanted to try and, kind of knock off the rust. And I want her to test out those 100 rounds of, 38 special before I went gangbusters and loaded up her 1,000 of them just to find out that they were no good. So,
is she more comfortable now than that she's gone to Florida?
Oh yeah,
because she was a little apprehensive before the trip, but because you know she hadn't shot for a while and she's really worried about her skills. Is she feeling better about it now?
Oh yeah, she's got her confidence back about it. So, yep, so it's all good. Yep. Yeah. Oh, and the only other thing I forgot to mention is while reloading, I broke my case feeder.
Oh no, that's like 2 months old, no?
Yeah. What it is, and I don't really like this design, but the way that Hornady designed their case feeder is the bucket up top makes it so that all the brass falls down the same way, like the bottom end down. But then there's another little contraption that makes it so that it only drops one onto the press at a time. Well, that little contraption is only held on by one screw, or bolt that goes through the frame, and then it just kind of sits on top of a nut. Well, that nut, it kept getting loose, so I kept having to crank that nut down tighter and tighter, and it actually broke right through that little contraption. So I just did that this weekend, so I haven't had a chance to call a Hornady, but if history shows anything, their Hornady's really good for their warranty, so I'll have to report back on how this warranty repair goes.
Now, didn't NEA said they wouldn't warrant something for you because you twisted it too tight?
Yeah, that was the NEA. Yep, the handguard. They said that I was too strong. Yeah, because that's what a lot of people accuse me of being, is too strong. Yeah, so they wouldn't replace the handguard because I cracked the handguard.
Well, I don't know what Hornady's like, but I hear they're pretty good.
Yeah, I've had good luck with them so far. Like, I've had a couple times where something small will break, and I'll just call them up, and I'll be like, hey, this part broke. And, like, before I can start, like, you know, giving them the sad story about, you know, how I'm poor and how, you know, I didn't mean to break it and, you know, how I'm just trying to help the needy. They're just like, yep, here you go. There's two on the way. Like, no questions asked.
I feel like in the reloading world, you have, like, three, maybe four companies. Lee, Hornady, RCBS, and Dylan. And Dylan, I don't know about anyone. Like, Dylan's the first name I've ever heard when it came to reloading. And they have such a reputation that I feel like in the same case with the optics nowadays, how Vortex and how everyone else is also doing a no questions asked warranty kind of thing because Vortex offers it. I feel like everyone else is going to be jumping on that bandwagon soon with reloading because honestly, like they make their money with like all the dies and everything. So if you break a part here or there and they send you a free one, it's just money for them, free advertising kind of.
Yeah, well, so I think it's the same thing like a gun, right? They don't make their or a car, right? They don't make their money selling the initial thing. It's all the accessories on the side that they make their money on.
Yeah. So,
and I mean, I'll say so far, Hornady's done such a good job. I would consider buying more Hornady products, right? So.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, a press to me is a very big investment, especially if you were kind of climbing the ladder, right? If you started with one company single stage, then you're going to go up to a turret or progressive, right? They want you to stick with the same company and not jump ships halfway through.
Right, because then all the equipment in your reloading room looks the same. It looks nice when you walk in the room and it's all red or all green or all blue.
Yeah, who doesn't want to have matching equipment? It's like having the same color cars or something, right?
Yeah,
same color guns.
Yeah.
All black.
There's a reason I got a black Devore.
So that it would match everything else?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think the black one looks good. The green one looks good too, though.
Yes, I really did want an OD green, but now I'm sort of locked in with the whole black thing.
Yeah.
My Jericho's black. You know, my Ruger American, which I've actually given back to my dad, is black. My Uzcon's black.
Yeah. Well, eventually you're going to find something that's too pretty and you're not going to be able to pass it up, even if it isn't black.
Even a deep, deep polished blue, that old, old school blue and some nice walnut or some nice rosewood checkering looks much nicer than black. I like stainless myself.
Yeah, stainless isn't bad. I actually like it because I find that, because if you scratch a stainless, it's still stainless underneath, right? If you scratch something that's blued or something like that, if you go right through the bluing, then now you have this silver streak through it that will rust and.
Yeah. I don't know. I personally find the stainless is too flashy.
Too flashy for your taste?
Yeah. I'm more of the subdued guy. Like I was looking at, I think it's, Pieta, but some company in the States. I was reading an old Guns and Ammo and they're talking about these,
the Pieta single actions, the 1873s.
Something like that. I don't think it was Pieta, though. Maybe it was Pieta. But they had, like, four models. Two of them are, like, case-hardened. One of them was blue. It was 7th Cavalry reproduction. And then they had this, like, stainless steel, or it was actually nickel plated with ivory grips. And I showed it to my wife and I'm like, so do you like this one? She's like, yeah, it's okay. And then I showed her the case hardened ones and she's like, oh, those are a lot better. So yeah, we both agree on that point. Like I personally like the 7th Cavalry reproduction more than the case hardened ones, but she liked the case hardened ones.
Yeah.
I know. In a single action, I wouldn't get a stainless steel. I would definitely get something dark because your front sights can be stainless steel and your rear sights can be stainless steel. So it's going to be hard to even get a sight picture unless you're allowed to paint them black.
Yeah. Well, that's what Sarah did. Sarah, for her cowboy rig, she has two, she has the chrome plated, or if they're probably nickel plated, whatever, with the ivory grips on them. That's what she had. And she painted her sights black.
Oh, you'd have to. You'd get blinded in the sunlight.
Well, yeah. Well, I think she didn't have a problem for her first couple of matches, and then she went to one match where it happened to be sunny, and then she couldn't see her sights at all, so. But that's a simple fix, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which reminds me, I have to black out my dots on my Jericho again, Thomas. That marker we used came off, and I keep lining up my sights wrong now. Like, I figured out what the issue was. I keep lining up the bottom of the circles of the dots together.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening is, I think they have the dots all the same size. So the front sight is actually smaller in your vision because it's farther away than the other dots. So when you line them up, you have like all this wiggle room in the middle. So I keep dropping my shots because I'm lining up the bottom of the dots, I think. Whatever the case is.
Well, that was a permanent marker. That was just that whiteboard marker. That's probably why it came off.
Yeah, I gotta use a permanent marker on that. Cause I wasn't sure at the beginning whether I wanted to keep the marker or not. And yeah,
that's why I assured you I did. Look, it'll come off, Benny. I promise. It's not permanent. Okay, I promise it'll come off.
Right.
But I do keep a permanent marker in my bag, so I'm gonna actually do that to the new grandpa. I'm gonna black out the rear sights, and I have a little glow in the dark paint that I got Michael's. And I'll pull out the white paint. And I'll just fill the front sight with the glow in the dark paint. So it gives you a nice, instead of the white, you get a bright green color, so. Huh.
Nice.
All right, well, moving on to guns in the news. Benny, you want to take story number one?
Okay. Charity shoot registration is open. Course of Fire will be decided soon, and you can sign up. The registration's in the show notes.
All right, story number two. Province of BC pulls the trigger on new Fraser Valley gun regulations by Simon Little. The province had unveiled new regulations for recreational gun users in the Fraser Valley in response to an issue in quote-unquote reckless gun use. The new rules come amid concern that indiscriminate shooting is creating safety issues and damaging wildlife. The province says in the last year, gun use forced wildfire crews to back off fire suppression efforts, and there have been reports of unsafe shooting in the direction of cabins and recreational areas. Under the new rules, no shooting zones have been created within 400 meters of certain roads on Crown land in the Fraser Valley Regional District. The changes apply only to recreational and target shooters and do not affect licensed hunters or First Nations. The new regulations come with some hefty new fines, up to $50,000 and 6 months in jail for the first offense, and scaling to as high as $100,000 and a year in jail for repeated offenses.
Yeah, we had the same thing happen up here in the Nanquan, because it's a wildlife management unit, and some of it's shared land that landowners let people hunt on. And it was the target shooters. They banned target shooting up in there because of the errant bullets.
Oh, wow.
I was going to say, like, isn't that normal in Ontario? Like, there's places where you're not supposed to go shooting, never mind hunting.
Well, it depends, because it's a hunting area that you're allowed to hunt, and it is a wildlife unit. You could legally target shoot in there too, as long as you could prove that you were target shooting. I used to bring in, basically targets with me just to show that I was shooting. And there was a hill at the back that I used to go to, but people just shooting across open fields, and bullets were hitting people's property, and they just said, okay, that's it. Unless you're actually hunting, you're not allowed in here.
Yeah, well, that's too bad. It's one of those situations, right, where, you know, some people who weren't paying attention to, you know, their muzzle direction and things like that have kind of made it bad for everyone.
It's true. That's what's caused it. Because when I went in, I knew that we had to walk about 3 or 4 kilometers, but I knew a little place. It was a little backstop, so that's what we went to all the time. So I never had any issues, but.
Yeah, but it's the question of, are you willing to do that 3 kilometer hike with, you know, if you and your buddy came out with a crate of shotgun shells, right?
No, they wouldn't do it.
No, they take two steps off the road and say, far enough, right? They're blasting away.
Yeah, like we haven't done it ourselves.
We can't get a membership at a range, so let's go just shoot indiscriminately.
Yeah, let's take our frustration out. Yeah, that'll go over well.
When you're a Ganon, did you ask anything about the range?
No, I didn't. I saw the giant poster and it just said, I believe they do have registration open.
Yeah, it was what, $600 a year, and what was it? Initiation fee, $150, and a $600 membership.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think I just briefly made a comment to him, and I think he said, yeah, something about like the interest was there. So
it's there. It's
$600.
Yeah, it's expensive. I knew it would be from Ganyans. FOC might be a little bit cheaper, but I can see it being pretty close. You have to recoup their cost.
Honestly, they can put it higher than that, and they're still get members.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is frustrating, but true.
Ganyans is only open to 9 or 10 o'clock. They close, where I think FOC might be even a 24-hour facility. We'll have to see.
Yeah. Well, the other difference, too, though, if Ganyan is – the range is going to be separate from the store, then it means they can set their own times, right?
Right. I believe the two buildings are attached.
Well, they're attached, but do you go – like, I have no idea how the setup will be, but is it going to be a separate entrance?
You know, I haven't been down there since they had the fire.
Yeah. So, you know, there might be an entrance into the store from the range, but it might be the kind of thing where you could go into the range and never step foot in the store. And then there might just be a door from the range to the store. They can lock it up at night and they could still be 24-hour range.
Well, I still think it's great that we're going to have two ranges within like 10 kilometers from each other.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm sure that, like you said, Benny, they could charge whatever they want and they'll still probably sell out their memberships. But it's good to see that the interest is there, at least.
Yeah.
Well, they're doing the environmental studies. I got an email from the town of Ajax, a survey that they're doing for everybody who was at the meeting. And then they also have a big some big signage up in front of the range, letting people know what's happening, what's going to be there, and for public input and stuff. So it's moving forward.
Yeah,
hopefully.
I remember hearing about that in Israel, how some municipalities, they make you advertise that you're building a new development or something. So people would just take like random ads in different cities in these obscure papers. So they put out an ad, but you know, no one in that region actually saw the ad.
Oh, probably because they have to do the ad, so they just put it in some obscure place.
Yeah, exactly. Because they had to advertise that they were building this, you know, new development. So they put in the ad, but it was like if the development was in northern Israel, they put the ad in southern Israel or something. In some local, you know, school paper.
Yeah. In your local church paper, yeah. All right, so Thomas, what's new in the industry?
What's new is Ruger is selling AR lowers, which is something I'd never thought we'd see. The manufacturer actually selling components. So that's interesting. I haven't seen any prices. Who knows what will be available up here. I have a feeling what it is.
This retail is $299 for a complete lower.
That's not bad for a complete, but I was expecting, I think this is part of the boom that people were expecting. Or when Clinton didn't win, I think a lot of companies were gearing up for a boom that never happened. I think this is probably something Ruger was trying to cash in on, because if Clinton got elected, well, it never happened when Obama got elected. He was the world record gun salesman. Like, things were just going to go through the roof. So this big bubble was created. So you're going to see a lot of merchandise going at very reasonable prices these days.
Well, it's good for the gun buyer, especially a new gun buyer who doesn't want to spend a lot of money to get in the game.
Oh, especially in the States. Like, we're getting nailed up here because you got the $35 exchange rate, but still, right? Like, you look at some of the specials that FOC had, on the Easter weekend. Those were some great deals. Like, the prices have come down on a lot of guns.
Oh, yeah.
Plus our 35%. but.
Yeah. Well, that's what we get for living in Canada.
We get Canucked. That's what we get.
Yeah. What we get is Norincos.
Norincos and a shiny pony. That's about it.
All right. So main topic, build your own custom leather mag pouches and holsters. Thomas, you mentioned that you had found one of these build your own kits when you're at your store.
Well, that mag holder that I took apart and redid, I realized when I was doing that, it looked like it must have been a kit. It looked like it had been pre-cut and somebody just put the pins and hit them with the hammer and put it all together themselves. So I went looking to see if there was anybody that actually still makes that. I couldn't find anything in Canada, but is it Tandy Leather in the States? They do have custom leather kits where you can build your own leather mag pouches and holsters. The holsters are more like an outside the waistband. There's not a lot of support, but they look really cool. And being leather, you can custom do whatever trim you want on it, whatever color you want. And they were cheaper, like $25. So, you know, if you don't have a lot of money and you want to do something kind of special for yourself, for your gun, you can actually build your own leather rig if you have the skill. I wouldn't have the skill to do it, but they look pretty cool. Because a lot of them, you're just two pieces, and they supply the stitching and everything else, and you just have to do the coloring. Everything else is included.
So do you have to do the sewing too, though?
Yeah, they include the sewing. You will probably have to buy special tools because there's two special pullers that you need to be putting the stitching through. But once you get the basic kit, you can buy tools to do the trim. If you want to put a floral motif or whatever motif you want, or different relief cuttings, you know, if you really get into it, the variations are endless. I have a friend of mine who did a lot of leather work, and I have a couple of bookmarks, and I got a couple of wallets that Jack made me. And that's what he did. He got all the kits and he just resold them. So, you know, I wouldn't mind getting one of these and maybe one of the custom belt kits and make my own belt. Not a shooting belt, but a Pat's belt, but I wouldn't mind one of those little leather holsters. That's looks like something you put a barbecue gun in because it's all fancy with the horse hide and everything else. But
yeah, anybody's interested, running gun.
Yeah, it's definitely not a running gun. It's more, hey, this is cool, and then cover it up again. It's more for concealed carry. I just thought it was cool. These guys didn't think much of it, but I thought it was really cool.
I don't know. I guess I'm a plastic kind of guy.
These youngins with their space plastic and non-leather holsters.
Sometimes leather's
plastic
nice.
Gun and plastic holsters on plastic belts.
Yeah, that's about it.
And nope, you don't shoot plastic bullets, but you spray paint your lead bullets with some sort of plastic coating.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you're shooting next metal targets, then maybe you are.
I feel like it's like a goal to get all plastic.
I like what a lot of the stuff was leather when I started shooting and hunting. Like your ammunition belt was all leather, your rifle cartridges, your slings. All your accessories were leather.
Was your first gun, like, it wasn't called an 1873 because it was 1873 when you bought it?
No, actually, it was a Winchester Cooey that came out in the early 60s.
Close. Any time before the 80s is, you know, it's basically the 1800s, you know. So.
But the coolest thing is my grandfather was born in 1911, so that's cool.
Okay, so when you buy one of these kits, what are your leather options? Is it just cowhide?
I think everything's just strictly cowhide.
Strictly cowhide, okay.
The kits, when you go online, the kits have everything. So you get the basic kit so you can build it, but anything after that, like if you want to put there's scroll roking, scroll little tools, it's like a roller in your different patterns and stuff. I would actually go to one of those kits. There's one up Victoria Park and Steeles because I was looking at it. I'm actually going to take a run up there and look at the kits and see how much the tools are.
Okay. So I assume you could buy all the tools that you would need to do this.
Well, the real reason I started looking at these stupid things is I have a leather belt that I'm wearing, and it's a full grain leather belt. I bought this thing 40 years ago, and it's still, yes, it's that old. And I've been trying to find one. To get a full grain leather belt up here, it's going to be over $100. They have full grain leather belt kits. They're like $20.
So here's a quick question for you. What does that mean, full grain?
It's the full thick. It's the full height. Because a lot of times when you get the split height, especially suede, it's not a full thick height. They actually split the height. They cut it. It's not the full thickness of the hide.
Okay, so they make it thinner, essentially.
Yeah, basically they thin it out. So it
goes further.
Yeah, most stuff is a split hide. So if it's smooth on one side or rough on the other, like the suede, it's been a split hide.
Okay.
But with the full grain hide, it's really thick, and it'll actually support the weight of a gun. And then people actually will put a Kydex strip underneath the leather. But I just like the big 1-inch belt because my belt clip fits on there and my lito clip fits on there. So I can go online, I can order all this stuff, and I can make the belts for basically like under $20. I can grab whatever tools I want, and I can embellish it, maybe a little bit more money. I can make a really nice thing for $100. I could buy every little cutting tool that I could think of and every little emblem or pattern you can put in there. So,
well, yeah, like just ask Mike, how much was Sarah's cowboy action rig, like her gun belt?
Oh boy, I think she got like the lowest end that she could get, which, mind you, when I say low end, that does not mean low end in quality. That just means that it's the cheapest one we could find. And I think she still spent, oh boy, I'm just taking a guess because this was years ago. I'm going to say $200 American.
Oh wow.
I was thinking is it US made?
US made, yeah.
Looking here, you can see sets for her. As low as $36, whatever that means, or $24, like, that's, you get it for a lot cheaper here, but then again, you have to stitch it yourself.
Yeah, well, it also depends, I'm just looking at a couple of these, because she got two holsters in one belt, right? I'm not seeing any that are two holsters on one belt.
No, but they do, which is interesting, they do offer the Gunslinger Holster Kit, which I'm clicking on now, but it looks like it's just one holster.
Yeah.
And that's $40. Or yeah. $69.99 if you're not a club member.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you were new to the game and you were trying to find, you're trying to do this as cheap as possible, which when you're doing cowboy action, you're poor. You're going to be poor. I mean, you have to buy four guns. I mean, three gun isn't as expensive.
No, because you.
Why do you think my wife won't let me do it? Because I have to buy four more guns.
Yeah, but you probably have half the guns you'd need.
Well, I don't have any single action revolvers. I had one, I sold it.
Yeah. Well, that's just it, right? It's expensive because you have that. Then you have to buy all this fancy holster stuff that's, I would say, is not popular, so it's more expensive and harder to find because of that. Plus, you need a full costume, which I'm sure George could tell you that you could spend more on your costume than you spend on your guns. Like, cowboy action is not a cheap game to get into.
No.
So if you're trying to save some money, yeah, this could be a way to try and save a little bit. Yeah. Because actually, when Sarah and I were going through the rules a little while ago, we realized one of the rules actually says that you need to have a knife on you at all times, on your gun belt.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wait. So she doesn't have a knife sheath on her gun belt, so she doesn't actually have that.
Well, that reminds me, my knife belt, or actually my knife sheath, should be ready shortly. I ordered a custom sheath from Vast Custom for my Ruger 119 that Terry got me, so.
Oh, yeah?
You're sending me some pictures, too.
Okay. Yeah.
Nice.
So at least if I get into cowboy action, I do have the knife and I do have the sheath for the knife for the belt. I don't have any guns, but I got the knife.
One step at a time.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look, I found a crush washer. I got to build another AR.
Yeah.
Sounds like a Mike excuse to me.
I am building another AR, but that's besides the fact. Hey, I actually have a lower, so I mean, it's closer.
How far? Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, how far is George? Because I actually did order a lower parts kit and a buffer tube with stock, so I think I'm catching up pretty quick.
I think all George ever got to was a lower and a lower parts kit. I don't even think he even got the buffer tube.
No, he's just got the lower parts kit. And he actually had to have Trevor come on the show, and then after the show to do step-by-step instruction to get him in. And, you know, thank God Trevor, very patient teacher. But he got it in.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, because there's a couple people who have emailed into the show to let us know how far their AR builds are coming along. And, yeah, George, you're falling behind quick.
Oh, Krasnow has no mercy on him. None whatsoever. No. None.
See, if he already had one AR and it was his second AR, then I could forgive him, right? Because, you know, he has one. He doesn't need to have another one. Well, actually, everyone needs to have another one, but that's besides the point.
Well, the only one gun he's bought, the only gun he's bought since I've known him is that Marlin that I, oh no, he did buy the Buckmart for his daughter, but the only gun he bought was that Marlin 22 off me.
Yeah. No, but you're right, Benny. One is none, two is one.
And three is just right.
Yeah, exactly. So come on, George, you don't even have one.
There's a reason why there's no such thing as two gun. They call it CQB because they don't want to just say you have one gun.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And you have three gun, which is just right.
Yeah. Sounds about right. I like that theory.
Yeah, I agree. It's my fault, you know. I took him shooting a couple years ago, and he'd never shot an AR, and I let him shoot my Remington R15, and I thought he was going to have an orgasm on the spot. He just, oh, my God, I can see why you guys love these things. I got to get one. And then that sort of slowly faded away.
Yeah. well, and it's kind of too bad because right in that time was the golden age of, you know, our dollar was pretty much on par with the American. AR parts were cheap, right? Like, I remember that was around the time that I priced out my first AR that I was going to build. And I think by the time I finished my lower and I went to go start doing my, the upper half, all the prices had changed. That was when the big swing came, and it turned into it's going to be double what I was originally going to pay. So I just kind of said, screw it, I'll just buy the NEA complete upper and just be done with it.
Yeah.
But that's, I guess that's just the way it goes.
And you know, George, you always just buy a Canadian made AR complete and don't have to worry about it. NEA make a nice product.
Yeah. You just buy it complete, and then if there's any problems with it, then you just send it back, right? As long as you don't over-tighten the handguard and crack the rail.
Do they actually publish the torque specs for those screws?
I looked it up afterward. I never found torque specs for that. I did actually go out and buy a torque screwdriver after that, though.
Yeah.
I didn't want it to happen again.
Man, those aren't cheap either.
Well, I'm trying to remember. I think I got mine for a decent price. If you get the non-gun one, like if you just go and get like the Mastercraft one from Canadian Tire, I think it's a lot more reasonably priced. Same thing, like you're doing your reloading. If you ever want a set of digital calipers, I think Canadian Tire, their digital Mastercraft digital calipers go on sale for like 10, 15 bucks.
Oh yeah.
Like multiple times a year. Go get those. Don't spend the, what is it, like 50 bucks that Wheeler wants you to pay for their digital ones.
It's the exact same one.
Yeah.
That much I do.
Yeah, there's a bunch of gun stuff that we just get ripped off on, right? They put the word gunsmithing on it and all of a sudden they think it's worth twice as much.
Well, especially the Wheeler stuff. It's all plastic. It's not really worth the money and you're just paying a premium for a name.
Well, I think it also depends on what you're getting, what you want from Wheeler. Cause I've had, like, I have my trigger pull scale. It's not the greatest, but it's a good entry level one.
Yeah.
And if you need tools, I'm pretty sure that I have an AR tool from Wheeler. And I mean, it's all steel. It's not like it's plastic. And I'm pretty sure, I'm trying to remember it off the top of my head. It had everything that you need to put on a barrel, put on a buffer tube, like pretty much build your entire AR. Just from this one tool.
Well, I'm not saying it's bad stuff. This stuff works. I've got the Wheeler punch set and I've got the same trigger pull scale. Yeah. When you do your pull, do you measure from the front of the yellow arrow or from the back of the arrow?
Oh, on my trigger pull.
I've seen people on YouTube take the measurement from the back of the arrow and other people take it from the front.
To be honest, I can't even picture it right at the moment.
I'd like to actually get a weight, like a scaled weight, and just to test it to see how accurate it really is.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Just like take a 1, 2, 3 pound weight and just hang it off there and see what it says it's at.
That's one way of doing it.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I've thought a few times of having to do something like that only because of every once in a while you pull out a gun and you go, oh man, the trigger pull is way too much. Okay, I'm looking at it. I think I do it from the back of the arrow.
Yeah, so have a couple other things, but I've been doing it from the front. It actually gives you a heavier pull if you do that. That's a pound.
Yeah, well, but to me, if you do it from the back, it makes sense because it gets wider when it gets to the back.
Yeah,
it could be. So it's almost like a point that it's pointing at what the trigger pull is, right?
But the front of it is like the point, right?
No,
it comes down the angle and the back is flat. I don't have mine in front of me either.
Oh, I don't either. I just pulled it up on Cabela's website.
Yeah, I was going to say, I just pulled it up on Google because I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
But I think I paid $25-$30 for that. I didn't pay a lot of money for it.
No. They have it on Cabela's for $35.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Cabela's and paid a little more.
Pardon me?
Cabela's will always be a little bit more.
Yeah.
So looking at it, I'd say it's from the point of the arrow.
Like yeah, from the back of it?
I guess so. Because when it's quote-unquote zero, what's it, 8 ounces? I'm just looking at a picture on Google right now. That's up against the end, right? So.
Yeah, that's what I would think, too. Okay, yeah. I just wanted to know. It doesn't actually say on the manual, like you don't get a manual with it, and it doesn't say where to take the reading from, as I recall, because I did look.
Yeah.
I think a lot of things are like that. Like, here, take this, and figure it out.
It's amazing how many people
smart cookie.
Don't have scales. I got a message from listener Jason a couple weeks ago, because he put his Apex trigger in his M&P, and he asked me if he can come over and meet me at the range just so he could weigh his trigger pull.
Oh, yeah?
I said, you know, if you go to FOC for $30, they do have them in stock.
Yeah, but why would I buy one? Like, I just arrange a range day with you and have you use yours. Like, really?
Well, that's it. He just wants to see how much of a drop that it did do because his M&P, it was off my scale. It was over 12 pounds. It was horrible. So I'm sure the Apex is going to be a heck of a lot nicer for him.
The competition or the duty kit?
I think the trigger's red. Does that help? I just remember seeing the picture.
No, that does not help at all. Though I was checking Sarah's because I was pulling out Sarah's M&P when we were changing the sights, and I had the trigger scale out because a friend had asked me to bring it next weekend to the match so he could try. He had done a whole pile of work to his revolver. He wanted to see what his trigger pull was at now. So I had it out, so I tested it, and she has the competition kit in it. No trigger because you can't do the trigger in 90PA. And I think it was roughly 3 pounds.
That's not bad.
No. And I think that's what they advertised. I think they advertised it at 3 pounds.
Because he was talking about just doing the kit originally, but the picture he showed me was a different trigger. And he doesn't compete with it, so he probably put the trigger kit in. But yeah, 3 pounds in the M&P, that's not bad at all.
No. And really, to me, almost more of the value is how good the trigger is after. Like, there's no sponginess left in it. It's a nice light pull right to like a wall. And then it's just 3 pounds. It breaks and it goes.
Yeah. The Smith and Wesson triggers are horrible. They really are. I haven't had one out of the box. It was actually the only one they had out of the box that I actually liked was, Jazz's, and that was his 22. And I didn't realize it was a single action.
Yeah, the M&P 22.
Yeah, that had the nicest trigger.
Yeah.
But any M&P I've tried that's had no work, I've never liked. Kevin Latham got his back from he had some work done on it, and his was actually quite nice. But he had the trigger chain. It was still the same trigger, I think, but the internals were changed, and it wasn't bad. It was quite nice. It was a nice shooting gun.
Yeah. Oh yeah, there are a couple options out there for people with the M&Ps, and from what I've heard, you can even put the what's the economy line of M&Ps? It's the one SVD? Oh,
the SV9 or something?
Yeah, something like that. I've heard you can even put the Apex trigger kits into those as well. Maybe there's a separate one for those ones, but...
Those things are selling for still under $400.
Oh, yeah. Well, they were on sale. Was that FOC that had them on sale for like $350 or something like that?
Yeah, it was dirt cheap.
Yeah. If you can get over having that barrel sticking out the end of the gun, and you don't care about having all the bonus features of the adjustable grips, then that thing is one heck of a good deal, especially for someone just starting in the game.
Oh, even as your first gun, like if you need something, that's a short barrel, 4 1/4.
The M&P?
No, the S is it, it's the SV9, isn't it?
That is, well, it's originally US made in 4 inches. So okay. The 4 1/4 inch sticks out that 1/4 inch.
Even for concealed carry, that's a great price. How about cheaper than a little bit more than a High Point, but it's going to have a lifetime warranty and it's going to shoot.
Yeah. And you get the name of Smith & Wesson on the side of it, right?
Well, that doesn't always mean very much.
No, but I mean, it's better than, you know, some people like having that name on the side of it as opposed to it saying Norinco.
Definitely. Yeah.
Right. Generally, it means that it comes with a little bit more build quality than,
Smith & Wesson make a great product. I've had lots of Smith & Wessons over the years. I've never had a problem with them. I especially like their 1911s. They're very nice.
Yeah.
But I would never break down and buy an Orinco, ever.
Really? Are you sure? I'm starting to look at the.
I've had momentary lapse of reasons, but I've never buy one.
P226 clone. The only thing I think
The NP22 or something like that?
The NP22. The only thing that would really, that would hold me back is if it didn't fit in a SIG holster. If it doesn't fit in the SIG holster, I don't think I'd get it.
No.
Nice.
I've actually heard of, I've heard a couple people say that they bought that gun and they say if you put the effort into working on it, you can make the trigger just as good or better than a SIG trigger.
Oh, really?
So. Yeah. Now, I've also heard other people say that there's other issues with them, but, I mean, if you're a big fan of the SIG platform, but you're not willing to drop the $1,000 that a SIG goes for, you know, it could be a good entry.
Yeah.
Or you can look for a used SIG.
Yeah.
How messy was your NORC when you opened up inside? Like, machining-wise, tool-wise, like, what kind of mess did you encounter? The outside, I bet you looked fine, but the inside, I bet you was an absolute mess.
I haven't actually... Have I stripped that gun apart? I must have by now. Yeah, I took it all apart to clean all the grease out of it. It's... You can see a lot of tooling marks. Like, they obviously didn't take the time to, make it pretty on the inside. But I mean, there is no metal where there's not supposed to be metal, and there's metal where there is supposed to be.
Well, so. That's always a starting point. So how much friction did you have to pull back on that trigger shooting before it broke?
I haven't done any work to it yet, and I believe the trigger pull is sitting somewhere around, I want to say 8 or 9 pounds.
I don't know, is that bad for a 1911 out of the box?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, what? I think I have Sarah's down to less than 2 pounds for her trigger pull. And I think the only reason why it hasn't gone any lower is because she didn't want it any lower.
So. And is that just with polishing, Mike? Or is that with trigger spring replacements and stuff?
We did do some spring replacements, but to be honest, that didn't make as much of a difference. Polishing cleaned up a lot of it. It made it very smooth. It took a lot of the grittiness and the, I'd call it like the difficulty, the false trigger pull, I would almost call it, out of it. And then the flat spring that goes in the back.
Main spring.
That spring. Yeah, that spring I actually found made all the difference. That's like the one spring that I played with that took it from, I think I was starting at about a 6 pound with her gun and got it down to 2 pounds in like 2 seconds.
It doesn't take much with the spring. You just got to tune the key, but you got 3 different springs in one, so you have to really be careful what you're doing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You have to make sure. Because I know Sarah said when I first started playing with it that she found the trigger wasn't quite returning as well as she would like it. Like, she found herself short stroking it a lot. So I just increased it a little bit just to make sure that it would push hard enough back on her finger to make sure that it reset every time. So I think we started this main topic on building your own holster to mag pouches, and we ended up on how to tune a 1911 trigger.
Well, we have to make up for it because the Armed Squirrels Project didn't put on the show this week, so we have to.
What about our Slack? What about our Slack?
We're not back because it was 2 weeks. We've never done it. We've never missed a show, ever.
Yeah, we have.
Didn't you and Sarah do shows when I was off?
Yeah, there was 1 week though, right after you came back. You and George decided to go on vacation together. I'm not going to say what you two are doing in the cabin.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
You guys went on vacation, and it was the same weekend that Sarah and I were driving out to Manitoba, so we couldn't do a show, and you guys couldn't do a show.
That's right. We were banned from podcasting on our vacation. I was threatened with severe physical harm if I even brought my computer or my microphone on my holiday. And not like I couldn't have done it by Skype, but.
Oh, well, either way.
It was worth it. It was a nice vacation.
So did we squirrel enough on that main topic?
Well, that was fine. That was fine. So we put the links in the show notes. It's a Tandy Leather. There used to be, I remember used to seeing quite a few of them in Toronto or Scarborough when I was a teenager. I only know of one location now. I think it's at the Vic Park in Steele. So if you're in the area, go check it out or go online. They have some interesting crafts. So if you don't want to build a holster, maybe you can make something for your wife. You never know.
Yeah. And it is nice to, be able to say that you've done something by hand yourself, right? Like, that's why I like working with a lot of my guns, so that I can say that, you know, I did this trigger job, not the gunsmith down the road.
And I saved $75 and actually did it right.
Hey.
Or if you screw up, you only can blame yourself.
Yeah, most of the time I screw up, it is myself, so.
Anyways, moving on to events. Benny, you want to take event number one?
Event number one. The Carbine Operator Course, run by Ragnarok Tactical, July 7th in Kitchener, Ontario. $200, that includes taxes. Links in the show notes. Event number two.
7th Annual Canadian Podcasters Charity Shoot, July 8th, Guelph, Ontario, $40. Like we said, registration is available. That'll be in the show notes.
And then we have the BC 3-Gun Redneck Champion. That is going to be on June 15th. And link is in the show notes. You can pre-register. You might win your hotel room.
Got your sixth charity shoot. Got your sixth is a charity shooting competition with PRS tactical style matches on July 22nd at Ensign Fish and Game. Longest mile range. Shooters can expect to see rifle shots out to 1,000 meters and pistol to 50 meters. Course of fire is dynamic, fun, and focused on teamwork. Our mission is to raise funds and create awareness of PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. Tickets can be purchased from www.gotyoursixshoot.com. The links are in the show notes.
There's one I didn't put in there. There is a shoot for autism up in Sault Ste. Marie. It's held on by NSA Guns and Ammo. So I didn't put the links in the show notes. If you're interested, you're up in the suit, go to the NAS webpage. But they're having Ipsic-style shoot, guns and gear giveaway. So go check them out. I didn't know whether we put a show out in time, so I didn't put the link in the show notes. I'm sorry.
When is that shoot, do you know?
I think it's Saturday.
As in?
This Saturday, which would be, what, the 30th? I'm guessing at the date today's
29th.
Okay, I'm close.
Close on the counts of horseshoes and hand grenades.
Okay, I will look it up and put the show notes. Hand grenades or horseshoes?
I've never touched a horseshoe in my life, so.
I've never touched a hand grenade either.
Yeah, April 30th.
April 30th, okay.
Yeah. Those are like $100. A toss. Those hand grenades.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When we went out for
training on them, they're like, yeah, these are like, well, 300 shekels. So at the time it was $100 US. So, yeah.
So you didn't like you wasting them.
So learn quick.
Yeah. Well, they give you a fake one first and that's a lot of fun too. Cause like you throw it and you're like, but even the real ones, you think like, you know, in the movies, you hear this huge bang and everything goes flying and nope. It's not that spectacular.
No, we never had to play with the fun stuff when I was in the cadets. They just gave us full auto rifles. Never get us grenades.
Poor Thomas. Considering I don't even know, do they even allow cadets to have rifles anymore?
I just saw
a thing about how they want to get rid of the replica firearms for the Navy cadets because they're teaching children about guns or something.
Well, yeah, they're training child soldiers, aren't they?
Yeah.
Isn't that what the cadets are?
Well, the problem with cadets is that it's actually a civilian-run operation. It's run by the civilians. It's not actually run by the armed forces. And, of course, the liberals are getting involved with cadets. Did you see the changes that they made to the Boy Scouts?
No.
A lot of change. Like Boy Scout, it used to be Scouts, you know, just Scouts. Now we have Scouts Canada and Scouts USA, and they've really, Tom could explain, listener Thomas could explain more, but it's just so politically correct, it's stupid.
Oh, that's
these are kids learning to be scouts, so it's just it's quite a bit different when I was a scout. So
yeah, I was gonna say I know when I did scouts, it was fun back in the day. So
I never had the privilege.
You didn't have scout troops in South Africa?
No, I grew up here, Thomas. Gosh,
I think they just call that being a child soldier.
Yeah, it's a little further north.
Anyways, moving on to listener email. You might want to do an episode, or at least provide clarification, on how to legally export guns, ammo, and gun parts out of the U.S. Your guest on episode 128 suggested that gun parts under $100 are not regulated for export under ITAR, and I believe he is incorrect.
He is.
Pretty much any and all gun parts. There are a few parts like sling mounts, scope mounts, and some, not all, scopes, bipods, and a couple of other bits that are not ITAR regulated, but pretty much everything else is included, including screws, magazines, springs, triggers, sights, stocks, including your handgun grips, are regulated under ITAR, no matter what their cost. The $100 exemption, which is now $500 exemption, applies only to licensed exporters, not your average U.S. citizen, and definitely not to Canadians while visiting the U.S. The cost of a shipment does not make it ITAR exempt. It only reduces the amount of paperwork and licensed exporter has to file for that particular shipment. To make it even more confusing, it matters if the part is for a rifle, pistol, or sporting shotgun, and any other shotgun or an air rifle, etc. U.S. Department of State is involved for pretty much anything except sporting shotguns, which is regulated by the U.S. Department of Commerce. I believe Department of Commerce also handles optics and sights, regardless of the firearm they are destined for. If you think Canadian laws and regulations are hard to keep straight, try reading the ITAR. A pistol grip is pretty much regulated for export by the same document as a battleship or a fighter jet. Perhaps you could have a guest, someone whose business imports from the U.S. to provide the details, perhaps someone from Iron Guns who definitely has their paperwork in order, or perhaps call the export desk at Brownells who also can explain it in painful detail. Cheers, Marcel. Thanks a lot, Marcel. We are actually in the process of trying to get someone on who could, someone with the proper expertise who can explain this. So you get a better main topic than this week.
It's true about the parts. And what they say.
They basically said if it's under $100, then there's no issue about it. And if I did need an export license, it would cost $250 for that license.
Oh, wow.
It's $400 for a firearm. If you want export.
Right, let me just see if I can pull up.
And also the company has to be registered with the State Department. Like it said, I tried to order a set of grips, like Roscoe grips, I think, from Brunel's a few years ago. And the State Department refused the order. It was only like a $30 thing, but the grips, the company wasn't registered. Or I had screws that hold the buttstock in my Marlin rifle. They were an ITAR control part. But if I wanted a rail that went on the top, it wasn't ITAR control because it wasn't made by the manufacturer. It was made by an off company.
Interesting.
So here we go. Regulated items must have an export license regardless of their value or quantities. Basic regulated items are barrels, barrel liners, action, receivers, frames, cylinders, flash hiders / suppressors, also brass / bullets. The export license application fee is now a flat rate of $250 regardless of the dollar value or quantities. When you have a gun component parts and their collective value is $100 or more, an export license is required. I've then followed up that was a response to the question about, because I'd read something on Reddit about needing an export license. So I said, okay, so to clarify, if I ordered a lower parts kit for less than $100, I don't need a permit. But if I order a buffer tube with it, would I need a permit? And then the response was, If the collective value of the gum component parts are under $100, then no documentation is required. And that's the response I got from Brown Owls.
Okay. Well, like I said, hopefully we'll get someone on the show who does this for a living, so they'll be able to explain it in great detail.
Yes, that would be awesome.
It's just regulation to the extreme on the guise of stopping terrorism, and all it does is stop commerce between law-abiding gun owners. That's all it does. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah. Well, it's the same thing that the UN arms trade or arms mark, whatever that thing's called.
Well, that didn't even do that. Like, this at least, right, this supposedly regulates things leaving the country. Like, that doesn't regulate anything. It just, now we know where this came from.
Yeah.
But we already knew that. It's okay. We have a new number now and a new letter, and so now we know where it came from. Or where it went.
All right, so second email. Hey, guys, great episode. Sorry I couldn't be there. Hope you are all doing well. Jess.
Hi, Jess. We wish you were here, too.
Yeah. It's too bad you couldn't make it. Hopefully next time.
Somebody will actually stop me and Jay from keep babbling on and talking all night. Me, Jess, in there just to rein us in every once in a while.
So if you have any feedback, questions, or comments, you can send them to host@newshootercanada.ca, our Facebook page, or in the comment section on our website at newshootercanada.ca.
We got an iTunes review.
We do. Can you read it?
Yes. Great podcast. 5 stars from Jay from Ontario. A great source of information for sports shooters in Canada. Entertaining and informative. There's always something new to be found here. Good work, guys. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you. All right. Facebook lights. Someone just changed it to 1080.
Yep.
Even though I have it at 1081. So maybe someone unliked us since the maybe someone unliked us since the show started.
I feel like sometimes if I type in New Shooter Canada, it'll tell me we have X amount. But then when I go to the actual page, it'll tell us a more updated number. Like right now I have it in the search bar. It's telling us we have 1078 and on the actual page it's 1080. So who knows? Apparently not.
Well, we're somewhere around 1080-ish. So
yeah.
Feel free to go on and give us a Facebook like.
Please.
Awesome.
Yep. Alright, so closing comments. I just want to say thanks to all the listeners for sticking with us. I know we haven't been on for a few weeks, and George, Wanda, and Thomas did record an episode, which I did hear was fantastic.
It was. Wanda was great.
Although no one else apparently will ever hear it because no one was recording.
Awkward.
Awkward. I know you can't see me, Thomas, but I'm looking at you.
I was recording. George wasn't
really?
Recording.
Where's the audio? Where's the episode?
Well, the file's there.
There's just nothing in it.
I got kicked out of the show about 5 or 6 times recording. People, George kept getting calls. He kept bumping me out. So I kept restarting it. But the main bulk of the show, the file's empty. It's air. It's there, but you click on it and it's just air. There's nothing there.
Yeah. So I want to say thanks to George and Wanda for coming on and, trying to record an episode at least, and trying to keep us pick up our slack where we left off.
You know, I did try recording a solo show, and 5 or 6 tries, and I gave up. And George felt sorry for me. I remember George telling me how much he admired Tony Brown from the Firearms Cafe because how hard it is to do a solo show. He was right. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Oh yeah. Yep. But George, you got to make it back on. Literally, when I was talking to Etienne, he was asking where you were and if you were coming back. So you need to make an appearance soon. People are starting to talk.
they always have been talking, but just getting a little bit louder now.
All right, shout outs. Thomas.
My shout out is to RJ and Jess. They got hitched a couple weeks ago. It's been a few weeks, so a late shout out to the happy couple.
Congratulations.
Did you see on their flower things or Rick's boutique? It was a black shotgun shell. It was his flower holder. And apparently it took it forever to find black shotgun shells. So it looked really cool.
Benny, any shout outs?
Yeah. Shout out to my wife for keeping me sane. She doesn't listen, but still.
Yep. Good wife will do that for you.
She keeps them well fed. She posts all kinds of food on Facebook all the time.
She doesn't make that. That's tasty videos she's just reposting.
Oh, so she doesn't actually make it herself?
Sometimes she does. Like she went through that vegetable phase and all that stuff with me. It was really good. But I think a lot of stuff she posts is tasty videos. I don't know.
No more spinach soup for you?
That was very interesting soup.
All right, I just wanted to give a shout out to the guys at the Reloading Podcast for answering my question about the primer caps that were popping off. You should go over there and give them a listen. And yes, Trevor, it is very annoying when Thomas says Ecotech instead of Eotech.
Eotech.
Is it Eotech?
What was the response?
So what's one of those things? What do you call those things that hang around your neck that you like hang a badge from, Thomas?
A lanyard.
Exactly.
Oh, I needed that. It's been a stressful weekend. I needed some fun.
All right, Thomas, take us on out of here.
Okay, until next week, keep your barrels downrange and smoking. Take the kids shooting.
Time spent at the range is time spent with family.
Not about the odds, it's about the stakes.
Good night, everyone.
Good night. Oh, good night. David, thanks again for the gun. It's cool. I like it.
I really like 22 now.
Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you with any questions or feedback you may have, or if you just want to call shenanigans. You can contact us at host@newshootercanada.ca or through our Facebook page.
The way they look, I like the shiny steel and the polished wood. I don't care if they're big or small, they're for sale until I want them all. I like guns, I like guns, I like guns.
All right, so Thomas, what's new in the industry?
Not a lot besides this new ground power, but the one thing that really surprised me is that Ruger is now selling AR lowers.
So who's selling what?
Okay, just edit that. Take that fucking right out since I swore you have to edit it anyway, and I'll just do it again.
So, outtakes. Yeah, Thomas, all episode long I could hear you clicking your gun.
I couldn't help it. It was in my hand.
Could you stop for a while? And I'm like, oh, good. He must have got the message.
And then
and a little while later, I started hearing the click.
Then I pick it up. Click. I couldn't help it. It's calling me. I got to go clean it, work on it, put some grip tape on it.